Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 91-year-old artist, author, and World War II veteran Ed Larson of Santa Cruz, California. For a video of Ed with a couple examples of his artwork, check out the Hometown Heroes radio page on Facebook. He flew over the hump, the Himalayas, during World War II, ferrying fuel from India to China. And Ed, you made reference to the weather being your enemy. Were there occasions where you weren't quite sure you were going to make it?
Yeah, I had a few close scrapes, and weather is hard to define them specifically right at this point in time. But we'd have the radio procedures that we use were unimaginable today. We didn't have GPS, but little things happened. This buddy of mine and I were flying, I can't remember where we were taking this load. Anyhow, it was a C-46, and we were at Luliang. It was a good long strip and everything. And so we started to take off, and something didn't feel right about the airplane. I was flying pilot. He was flying co-pilot. We mentioned this thing is Logie or something like that. And we kept going and kept going, and we couldn't get her off. The runway, the end was coming up. I think it was a loading factor that had been loaded a little bit, maybe tail heavy or something. Anyhow, the last I remember is hollering, gear up. And before we were quite flying, but she held up long enough so that I could see, as I saw a huge pile of cement go by just under the left-hand gear as it was coming up. So it was that close. And it took us forever to climb to altitude. And we complained about the airplane when we got back. They ran a check on it, and both props and engines would run to max, which we needed. They figured it was probably some kind of a loading error. But little intrinsic things that happened, airplane accidents are always a chain of events. They go from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's very seldom one cataclysmic thing. It's something that you forgot to turn a valve, or you turn the valve only halfway and all of a sudden your engine cuts out on takeoff, or you forget to roll your trim tabs back. I lost a friend from that. And it's just little items, that the minuscule physical things that you do to take care of an airplane, you slip up, and that one thing leads to something else, leads to something else, leads to disaster. So
one, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like in that story that you just told, that if you had waited a split second longer to get the landing gear up, they would have hit something and you might have tumbled and
it'd have been a mess. Yeah, believe me. And you romanticize these things to a certain extent through the years, but I can still remember I had the throttle jammed. It's a wonder I didn't bend them. And we were both just trembling on the seat, and I can remember I did it just while we were talking, looking out that side window and just seeing that thing flash past. And I thought, God, we made it, you know.
Mm-hmm. What'd you do when you came home from the war?
There again, I was kind of screwed up. Didn't know what to do. When you're in a group like the one I was in, or anybody, I'm sure you've heard of that or seen that movie Band of Brothers. Your home life and the family that you left are supplanted by the guys that you went to war with. I know it sounds crazy, but it's the truth. And it was that way with me. I was uncomfortable at home. In fact, I took one leave right after I graduated from flight school, and I went back to the field 3 days early. Not it was because of my family being weird or anything. It was just that I wasn't comfortable. The guys that I knew and had spent a year and a half with in close contact, doing a lot of things we loved and enjoyed, I wasn't comfortable when I came home from the war. I didn't know I had this problem, this mental situation that I'm talking about. I was uneasy. I was anxious. I drank too much. I started school, couldn't apply myself. It took me a long time to get it together. And then gradually, after I was married, I started in, got a regular job, and moved on up the ladder, so to speak, went back to college, graduated with a good grade point, went into education, which was a wonderful thing for me, and that was it.
Where, I was about,
art major. That's why I referenced drawing airplanes all my life. I always had a drawing talent.
Do you still draw?
Not very well. My eyes, as I say, have gotten so bad that that's one of the things that I really miss, because my art was at a professional level. I did a lot of illustrations in the book there, some of which were done after my eyesight began to fail, but they're still recognizable and I enjoyed doing them.
That's when you become an unintentional impressionist, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The less accuracy, the better. Yeah, well put.
I see some of your drawings right here, and I'll put some photos up at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Also a link there to where you can buy Ed's book, which you're going to get almost 500 pages worth here. It's very lengthy. What made you want to write this book? Did somebody have to twist your arm?
Yeah, they did. People kept asking me why I had, particularly because the war over there wasn't very well known. I sent home voluminous letters to my mother and my grandmother during the course of the war. And when the years went by, my mother had saved everyone, tied them up with ribbon and put them in a cardboard box. That was one of my chief resources, because I could go back and read all the letters that I had, not only from the States, but overseas. And although a lot of them was censored, it triggered a lot of memories that made it easier for me to write the book.
One thing I've noticed about this book, it appears to mix your first-person narrative and the things that you witnessed firsthand with the broader picture of the war and putting it in context of what's going on globally.
I tried to time it so that what I was writing about was of a certain period in the war, yeah. I carried the story, the broad history of the war through the whole book.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I asked you about cabin conditions in your airplanes when you're flying over the Himalayas.
Oh, yeah. Cold and windy. Those airplanes were great, but the windows didn't fit, and there was always something going wrong. And if you'll notice on one of the pages on the book, there's a huge hose hanging down from the ceiling is right beside me, and that was a heater hose for the main cabin. And if you got really cold, you could take one of those hoses and shove it down inside your collar, and that hot air made it palatable for you to be there. But your feet got cold. The rain came in. It was not a bed of roses. It was not like your Boeing 767.
No. Not the pressurized cabins of today.
Oh, no. No, we were on oxygen.
You had to be, or else you wouldn't have been able to breathe. And how cold were the temperatures? Are we talking about 70, 80 below?
Oh, no. I don't know. I know it was cold enough so my feet froze up almost permanently. No, it was just, I don't think it was that bad for that long a time. I would call it damn uncomfortable.
All right. And you mentioned sticking the heater hose inside your jacket. Now, I understand one of your flight jackets got some use in a more recent American war.
Yes. Yeah. Proud to say that my granddaughter was, there were two girls. My wife and I helped with raising both of them. We spent a lot of time with them. Jenny, the one that of which I'll speak mostly, was the kind of a kid that would drive you crazy. She made our life miserable and did everything wrong, didn't know what to do with herself until my wife told her one day, "You're going to do something with your life, and I'm going to get you started." And she went out to the Navy recruitment office and said, "Hey, I got an intolerable kid at home that needs some help. Can I bring her out here?" And they said, "No. We'll come see her." So a couple of guys from the Navy recruiting office came out and talked to her, said that she might be able to get in the Navy if she got a GED. She didn't even have her high school diploma. So she thought it over and thought it over. They took her to San Jose for testing. She was very bright, totally bright. And she passed the test, I think, higher than anybody they'd experienced in this recruiting office. So she was on her way, and she got her GED. I took her out to Pacific Grove for a month or so every day so she could finish up her GED. After boot camp, she went to the Navy language school, learned Russian and Farsi both, and acted as an interpreter for the military. Then she went overseas, I guess because of the fact that I'd been flying. She volunteered to become an aircrew member, also a spook listener, you know. I think she picked up about 800 or 1,000 hours of combat flight time, but she decided that she didn't want to stay in the Navy because she was going to have a baby and she didn't want to be deployed again. Anyhow, she went on to take the same kind of job that she'd had in the Navy with a private company, and that's what she's doing now for NSA, National Security Agency.
Are you allowed to tell me that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But so when was it that she wore your World War II flight jacket?
That was when she was flying in the P-2Vs, when she was on her session in Afghanistan and Iraq.
So she's flying in Afghanistan and Iraq with the Navy in surveillance missions.
Right.
But she's wearing the same jacket that you wore flying over the hump 70 years ago.
That's right. Absolutely.
Gotta love it.
A2 jacket.
Outstanding. And that's not the only more recent twist. I'm guessing it's not in your book, the adventure that you had just in the last 6 months or so at the Salinas Air Show, which is a popular event every year in Salinas, California, not too far from here where you live in Santa Cruz. You got to go up in the plane that you used to train guys in?
That was one of the great things that's happened to me in my life. I can never thank those people down there enough. Dave Prestes was the pilot that took me up. Just a marvelous guy. Flies P-51s and flew this T-6. I called down there to see if it were possible to purchase rides on military aircraft. I mentioned the fact that I was a World War II pilot and wanted to take a ride, and they made it available. They called and said, well, you're not paying for any ride. We're going to give you a ride in this T-6. And I thought, oh, man, just a dream come true, which it was. And Dave has become a friend, the guy that flew me in the T-6. Everybody was just so great to me. I can't tell you, it was one of the best days of my life, and I told them that. I want to say this, as a veteran of a war 70 years ago, 91 years old, the care that I've received from my local Veterans Administration has been unexcelled. I have a Dr. Mary Roberts down at Fort Ord that has given me as high quality physical treatment as any doctor I've ever experienced. And I have to say that because I hear so much. I know there's probably some shortcomings. But when you figure that this country, after 70 years, still remembers and compensates veterans for their service, taking care of their health needs, their mental needs, I think it's miraculous. There's no other country in the world that treats their veterans like this country does. And I'm so deeply grateful for that.
Well, you say that, how grateful you are. And, well, the point is, we're grateful for you and all those guys like you. And I don't want to forget to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for writing a book about it so we could understand what really went on and what it was all about. When you think back now on all these experiences, what are you most thankful for and what are you most proud of?
Without question, I'm most proud of my service. I'm most proud of the fact that as a little child, I was introduced to a phenomenal capability, the capability of flight, and that through all the years, I was able to maintain an intense interest in that. People have been kind to me ever since I've lost a great deal of my sight. People have taken me up on flights. I've been treated like a king. And through it all, the capability to fly an airplane, a military aircraft, particularly when I was flying single engine, transcends any other happenstances other than my marriage, of course, and the love of my children and all that. It's right up there with the top. I can remember when I was flying T-6s, I used to look out from side to side and see, I'm up here and I'm flying this thing. It could have guns on it if it needed them and all this, and this is the greatest moment of my life. And it was.
And one last thought on your recent T-6 adventure here in Salinas. I've been up in one of those T-6s, and what I remember is the pilot has the ability, if he wants to let you fly the airplane from that back seat.
They let me fly.
Yeah?
They put the stick in the back seat and let me fly the airplane. Now, I didn't do a very good job of it because I don't see much anymore.
You're literally flying blind? Is that what you're saying?
I was flying flying blind in the true sense of the word. And Dave and I laughed about it, that I kept losing and gaining altitude, which I never would have done if I'd been able to see. Because he said, well, you haven't forgotten anything, which was a kindness that he didn't have to say, but was deeply appreciated.
Did you feel like you were 20 years old again?
When I sat down in that airplane, I felt like I'd never left it. Everything was where it was supposed to be. The instrument panel was fogged, but I knew what was where, and I knew where the throttle was, the mixture control, the prop control. I told them, and it chokes me up a little bit now, it was like going home.
Hmm. Well, I guess the only other question on that I have is, now that you've checked that box on the T-6, is there an airplane out there that you've always wanted to get in that you still haven't?
P-51. That's in my bucket list. At 91, I hope the opportunity will present itself sometime so that I could take a flight in a P-51. It's a dream, but I've already had one magnificent dream fulfilled, and that was a flight in the T-6. So I don't know if you ever have a right to ask for another one. You know?
No, but other people have the right to bless you with it if they so desire.
Well, that's wonderful, yeah. I'm just grateful for all of the kindness that has been extended to me, and that's the payment. Only payment that I really needed and wanted for the time I put in. I've been thanked a million times.
Well, I'm glad you were up for hearing it one more time from us today. That's Ed Larson. Check out his book, some of his artwork, and the photos at hometownheroesradio.com, where you'll also find a little bonus audio with Ed that didn't quite fit into our show today. We are out of time, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.